Welcome to Hers,
His, and Ours,
part of the Scheist Podcast Network. Season 1, Episode 2, An Act of Will. After William's burial, secrets come to light. Ojai Fruit is in financial trouble, and Justin finds out about his father's affair with the mysterious Holly Harper. Meanwhile, Kitty starts her new job and moves in with her mother. Okay, well, season two, you know, episode two, we obviously left off on a little bit of a rough patch at the end of episode one. And of course, like I said, Daddy, don't even get a hospital episode. He is in the dirt to start episode two.
I mean, I think it's better that way, to be honest, because I think that was a directing choice, if you think about it, because I don't think, as bad as this may sound, the timeline of him passing or the extent of any potential CPR and emergency or life-saving medical interventions is really the point of the story. And they jump right into the nitty gritty after the funeral right away. And also it highlights what happens to family as a collective when there's a death in the family.
Yeah, that is fair. And I mean, you and I have collectively experienced more family deaths
in a year and a half.
Yeah. Well, in general, even outside of that.
That's true.
You know, so it's good to get into that territory, for sure. I just felt bad for Tom Skerritt. It's like, you're in the dirt in episode two. You didn't, like, they didn't even tell us that you died at the end of episode one. It was like they gave us hope that you might live. And then episode two, they're lowering your casket into the ground.
Yeah, but I feel like if you're going to kill off a patriarch of a family in episode one of a show, or have him have a heart attack, there's got to be a reason for that. And we don't need to see, it's not a medical drama. We don't need to see the emergency services.
Even Ned Stark didn't get done that dirty in Game of Thrones. He made it through episode one. But
I get it. I mean, maybe I have too much like knowledge of the future and like what the storylines kind of evolve in the next handful of episodes to feel like I don't feel like I was missing anything. I felt like it was a huge punch to the gut in general that that even happened in episode one to start off a family drama where you thought it's going to be like lighthearted potentially. And it's like, nope, get ready, buckle up.
Well, that's like kind of a mid-season or end of season one type of event.
Finale.
To put into the first episode of a TV show. But that's okay. I mean, I don't have a choice. He's not going to rise out of the ground. It's not that kind of show. But the second thing I had in my notes was Sarah's husband is a schmuck.
He sure is.
So I think when I said that she was my favorite character, like the momentum of the following episodes sort of had me most invested in her storyline. Because she's got older brothers, but she is the leader of the children. She might even be the oldest sibling.
I think
it's tough to tell because they're not like all announcing their ages.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, I still think Tommy is the oldest of all of them.
He definitely feels entitled.
Uh-huh. And that's why I feel like he's still the oldest. I think it's Tommy, then Sarah, then Kitty even potentially, then Kevin, then Justin. But I could be wrong.
We'll have to look it up before episode three. We'll look at the hierarchy of the children's ages because the actor's age doesn't necessarily answer that question for us. But, you know, when you have the funeral, it's like, oh, well, like death and property is always going to complicate things. And I think not only does it sort of complicate things naturally, because I think, you know, what people who have not experienced sort of death close to them may not understand is that, like, there's a ton of sort of like red tape and bureaucracy that goes into death. And even after somebody dies, like, you're still dealing with paperwork for a long time afterward. And it fucking sucks.
Yeah. Side note, I did just look it up.
Okay. Well, and here
I was almost correct, except I had them reversed. So it is Sarah, then Kitty.
So the sisters are the two oldest.
The sisters are the two oldest, but in that correct order that I thought. Mm-hmm. And the brothers are Tommy, Kevin, Justin. So the order I thought, but it's just the sisters before the brothers.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I'll be curious to see how that plays out later because, you know, you have a dad who's running a business with a bunch of his kids. Like, the oldest is obviously his firstborn. Maybe the one he trusts the most, maybe not. But then you have the son who's like, I'm the only son and I'm the oldest son. And so there's a lot of that, I think, interesting. Well, this fertile soil to plant some seeds in. But we get Uncle Saul, right? And for some reason, like I said, he just always is a prick, Ron Rifkin. I don't think I've ever seen him not be a prick in something. So I don't know what it is about his demeanor or whatever, but we find out that he wasn't just a prick, but he's friends with his brother-in-law's mistress, right? Because he's not Tom Skerritt. He's not William's brother in this story. So he's Uncle Saul that works at the company, and you think, oh, this is William's brother. He's the uncle. No, this is Sally Field's character's brother, and he's friends with William's mistress. So he's cool with the woman that is fucking his sister's husband. And I'm just like, dude, this, how did he get so shitty so fast? Like, I already knew he was going to be a prick just from seeing him on the show. But then within the first, like, 10 minutes of episode two, it's like, no, you might think he's a prick, but you have no idea how deep the rabbit hole goes yet. And so immediately I'm like, well, I hate fucking this guy.
And he's so good at it, too. And he contains that secret for so long from Sally Field. And, like, his poker face about it is unmatched.
I have sisters that are married, and I would not be cool with the person that their husband is having an affair with.
Exactly.
Would not happen.
Yeah, I would hope not.
Yeah, so, like, automatically, it's like, damn, he's a shitty brother, and he's a good brother-in-law, I guess, to William, because he's keeping his secrets, and he's a good employee, but damn, he's a shitty brother to Sally Field.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And like I said, the storylines and the the weaving of the storylines, they get so twisty.
They do. And, you know, I wrote here in my notes, way to go, Sally. I don't remember exactly what that's in regards to, but I think it's when she's coming to find Kitty at the studio because they're looking for... Oh, they're looking for the youngest brother, I think, is what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. And so she goes to find Kitty at the studio, and she's like, I don't have time for your fucking bullshit. And then we get a glimpse of Kitty arguing with her, I guess, Democratic counterpart. And I was like, it's interesting that they chose Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky as the example there of, like, oh, because he had this affair, he couldn't possibly, like, understand policy, or, like, his view on policy and economics and politics is invalid because of this infidelity. And so I'm like, yeah, that's not a completely unfamiliar talking point. So accurate, but also, like, frightening in that it's accurate. But I don't remember exactly why I said way to go, Sally, other than she's doing something.
Was that for episode two or three you said it?
No, this is episode two. Like I said, I think she, like, storms into the studio and she's like, I just don't have time for, like, bullshit right now. We're looking for your brother.
Yeah, because he wasn't responsive to them. Sally Field was worried something had happened because there is a substance abuse issue.
I think she told like somebody to shut up that was on the studio stage or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. It's been a few weeks since we actually watched the episode. I'll do better on future episodes, I promise. So if you're just if you're watching the episodes and then listening to this, give me some grace. I'll pick it up and I'll be better in the future. I didn't rewatch them either, so that doesn't help. But we also learned that Tommy, right?
Mm-hmm.
The oldest of the boys feels like he is entitled or should have been put in charge of the family business.
Yes, because he was already working in the family business for years. That was pretty much like his career.
Mm-hmm.
But William Walker brought Sarah in kind of last minute. And then especially when he dies, she has to take full control over everything. And he cannot handle that and is very threatened by it, feels disrespected by it, which I can understand to a certain degree, but... To her point that she makes, which I was like, yeah, go Sarah. She kind of puts him in his place and is like, I didn't ask for this. This is my specialty as far as the financials go. And honestly, she was kind of an unbiased, and probably why William brought her in at that point, that she was like an unbiased view where she could look at everything at like a piece of paper and then not have to stress about tunnel vision.
Is she a forensic accountant or something?
I don't know that she's a forensic accountant per se, but that is her specialty as far as accounting goes. I don't think they ever talk about the forensic side of things, but obviously William pulled her in for a reason, which we may discover later on. And I think there's some other dynamics with Tommy as to why he didn't put him in charge, which we may discover later on.
Mm. Well, we also learned that Sarah has a other competing romantic / love interest, mustachioed ex-coworker man. And I put that in my notes. She's definitely going to get dick down by this guy at some point. And I'm cheering for it to happen because they've established that her husband is a D-bag. But Michael Beach joins the show as Noah Guar. It's an interesting last name, but I don't know what the hell they did together previously, but they worked together. Accounting, law firms, stuff.
Yeah, I think Sarah worked at the previous, like where he's working now was her previous job. You know, and he brings up, like, why are you feeling guilty? Nothing's happened between us. There's obviously sexual tension, though. And that's kind of, like, where her response comes from as far as, well, you know, having that kind of tension. She's not saying it that way, but alluding to having that kind of tension with someone who's not your husband is also a painful thing because... She doesn't have it with her husband. Like, her husband is not giving her that attention. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I don't entirely remember. It's been a while since I've rewatched this show, so I'm excited to keep going. But I don't entirely remember if anything happens or if we just kind of get that little seed of like, hey, there's something going on with this character in the marriage, and then that unfolds later on.
Well, Sarah's husband is like barely... a character at this point in the show. It's like, hey, he plays guitar, he's got nice hair, hopefully they have some sex soon, but still, that's not going her direction. She also goes to the other brother, played by Matthew Rhys, to get legal advice on the situation that is a Bruin, and he gives her very, very specific advice about you have to go to the Securities and Exchange Commission. You have to go to the authorities. They might go easy on you based on like your willingness to come forward, but you got to do it. And he doesn't mince words. He doesn't really tell her that like, oh, you know, we can play this out and see what happens. But she, in her investigative bones, wants to know sort of what else is on the table, what's really going on. But I'm also like, why don't you just, like, this is your brother who's a lawyer, like, why not just trust him instead of like, no, we're going crook life, and we're gonna lean into the illegal side of things until I can find an answer, and hopefully that's like not gonna be a huge problem. But I imagine that it's going to be a bigger problem later. We start to find out more things as the season trickles on. But you also sort of circle back to that central element of grief that comes with the death of the father, and that's sort of like what has led Justin into his desperate binge. And we do have a very activated Sally Field looking for her son here, and she says to him at the end of the episode, like when they find him finally, he says, "You ungrateful child, you don't care about anyone but yourself. How did you get that way? You know what losing your father has done to me, and yet you take your life and you throw it around like it was worthless. Why?" And he says, "Because I wish I was dead. Don't you understand that? I wish I had died over there, Mom." So he wanted to die while he was serving, which I imagine was in the second Iraq war, or he was in Afghanistan or something post 9/11. And she says, "Well, you didn't die, and I'll be damned if I stand around and watch you kill yourself." So,
ugh, gut wrenching.
Yeah. So you can see that, like, she's a very fierce mom that loves her kids very much, even in the face of them not loving themselves. And I mean, as any good mom should, she fights for her kids. And I think it's the first time that we see from her also, like, how much losing William is actually really affecting her. Because there's a moment, I think it's in that episode, where she's kind of oblivious to, like, why somebody wouldn't go in the pool. I think it's...
No,
it's not that episode.
It's the next one.
Oh, gotcha.
And it's... Whoops! Yeah, it's Sarah that's oblivious. We'll talk about it on the next one. Next episode.
Cool. Well, they find Justin at the end, and she gives him a tongue lashing. But also you get the shared goal of Kitty and Nora together, like having to work towards something together. So it's like they're starting to mend the divide between them, because that moment earlier in the episode that I was talking about, where I said, "Go, Sally, a way to go, Sally," is when she probably wrongfully chastises her daughter, but she stands up for herself at the studio. She says to Kitty, in regards to Justin, "He never wanted to be a soldier. That's what you and your father never understood. He just wanted your approval. You were supposed to say no. You were supposed to say, 'We love you too much to get hurt like this. No. And now I don't know where my son is. I need you to help me find him. Please, please.'" So she's like, the mom is finally willing to put aside some of their differences to work together to do something. And when we meet her in the first episode, she's not interested in taking any first steps in repairing the relationship. She's like, "Let's just pretend to play nice here. Let's make it look to your dad like we're cool. And realistically, fuck you. Like, I don't like you. And I have a lot of reasons to not like you." So,
yeah, and I think this is kind of the first glimpse or hint at to why there is a divide and why they have been estranged for several years, especially because if you think back 3 years prior to that, that's 2 years after 9/11 happened and he was in the war.
Yeah, she blames Kitty for Justin's enlistment.
Yes.
In the war that fucked him up really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't understand it directly as like a child parent kind of thing, but given, you know, knowing a glimpse into what our soldiers and military and veterans kind of go through and the lack of mental health support around what they fight with and like their own internal demons and that they come home with and what they see, I don't entirely blame her either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame her for feeling a certain way, but that's a lot to put on your daughter.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not Kitty's fault he made that decision.
Yeah.
And Kitty saying don't do it may not have even changed his mind, and she doesn't actually know that. But I understand where, like the gut-wrenching pain is coming from mm-hmm. on Sally Field's side. And, you know, Kitty being conservative or however she kind of viewed her politics at the time, if Justin really thought that was going to get her and the dad's approval, that's on Justin still making that decision. Kitty and, you know, William probably were not telling him, go do this or else we're not going to talk to you, right? Like I said, if they had both told him don't go, that doesn't mean he wouldn't have gone. And Sally Field's character doesn't really know that.
Yeah, they all need therapy.
They sure do.
All right, well, that's where we'll leave it for episode 2. And we'll be back for episode 3.
Sounds good. Thanks for listening to Hers, His, and Ours. We'd love for you to continue on this journey with us. The easiest way to do that is to like and subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow our socials at Hers, His, Ours, spelled like time, on Instagram and X. To keep tabs on this show and others in the Scheist Podcast Network, follow at Scheist Podnet on Instagram, Blue Sky, and X.